2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Radio check.
Loud and clear.
KSL Sports and KSL Podcasts present Mode Push, an American view of F1, starting now.
One stop. Here's what you get with this Odyssey.
I'm gutted. I'm absolutely gutted.
I enjoyed this so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome on in. It is another edition of Mode Push, an American view of F1, the podcast sweeping the nation, of course. Welcome back to the program. I'm Alex Keery. And, of course, my co-host, as always, Dan Jimenez on the horn here with us. Dan, what's going on, man?
Just finally catching up on Alonso's still third, right? Or is he fourth, or did they knock him down to fifth?
Reissued. Other stewards showed up, reevaluated the other stewards' decisions. And George Russell, again, is able to get the trophy. No, yes, Fernando gets his second podium in as many races on the season, and like it should. I mean, in the end, when you watch a guy who has better pace and he's faster and he's like, I mean, when he took that first corner from Checo, you know it wasn't going to last for very long because their car isn't as good as Red Bull's, but my heavens, like you just, it was that middle finger and that little something to show you, I'm still probably one of the more, astute racers out here. The only person who probably could have stolen that from him, you know, maybe Max Verstappen, but Fernando's such a great starter. So I was glad that that Fernando got the podium again, and Aston Martin continues to impress, man.
Yeah, I was a believer after that first corner. I was like, you know, oh, here we go. This is going to be a competitive race. And yeah, Sergio got around him pretty quick. But that's two races now that Sergio had a poor start. And I wonder if that's a trend with the Red Bulls or not. I don't know.
Max isn't historically like perfect off the line either. I mean, he gets pretty good starts sometimes, but you know, he would get got sometimes, you know, and so
yeah.
Who knows? Maybe it's the car setup. It's like, okay, if we give away 0.2 at the start with whatever setup we have, we'll still be able to get these guys for the most part in the first couple of laps, which is what happened. So
yeah, it could be. And you know, this whole penalty drama with Alonso stems from the start of the race when he lined up, according to the race stewards, outside of the box. And it's kind of hard to see, but he was to the left, which normally when you think of like a race start infraction, it's like, oh, he started too far forward or he got on the gas too early. No, it was like he was too far left, which is like the first time I recall them issuing a penalty for like left and right.
Versus
ahead of the line. And it's really hard to see. I mean, they're so low in the car. Like, they're literally laying down on their backs on the ground.
Well, and I heard, for how low they are, too, Fernando's actually even lower than almost most people, not just because he's a little bit shorter, but they say he likes to ride even lower for whatever setup that he likes for his vision, you know? And so it's just, like, on top of the fact. And so I think that – and Esteban Ocon had one, what, last week? And he's like, I've never had one before in my career. We pull up in the grid – and I think that this is, you know what's going to happen. We're going to see a rule change. Not a rule change, but at least I think that with the grid setup, put a line in the very middle. These guys can't see anything. They're like, where am I? Like, they're not trying to line up, off kilter. You know, I think sometimes they do try to get an advantage. Maybe, I mean, you tell me, it's probably like some sort of a clean, you know, get some clean grip or something. I don't know. But in the end, Like, these guys just couldn't see. It's like being in my car, and I'm like, am I about to hit the front of the garage here? If I don't have something beeping at me to tell me, I can't really tell.
Yeah. I mean, it keeps happening, so they're going to have to change something. I was trying to think, was there any kind of competitive advantage lining up there? Like, Sergio had to pull off – after Sergio got his start, he had to pull to the left to cover Alonso and cover that inside line. And I guess if you're more to the left, then that's more distance Checo has to cover. So maybe there's some tiny advantage. And also, like, Alonso didn't seem very surprised on the radio when they said he got a penalty. He was just like, copy. I was like, kind of maybe expected that was coming, but he's been chill on the radio and everywhere all season. So maybe that's just his vibe. But so that's where the penalty came from that caused the 5 second penalty that they had to serve under. I guess they did that pit stop under the red flag or the safety car, which was helpful for them to not lose as much time. But man, that's when I guess all you know what broke loose.
Well, you tell me, because like the idea was, oh, they have this jack. It's already under the car. Was it touching it? Is it up already? So the idea of, and I guess how did they win the appeal? Like the way I read it was, oh, other teams have done this in the past. That was their argument.
Yeah, that's what I read is they said that they showed them – Aston Martin showed the FIA 7 other instances in which somebody served their penalty. The jack touched the car prior or during that like time that needed to be served, and the teams weren't penalized. And one of those 7 times was previously an Aston Martin serving the penalty from the prior season. So they kind of showed like, look, you guys haven't been clear on this. The rule book isn't totally clear on if the putting the jack under the car constitutes working on the car, or if that's just like helping the car kind of get into its pit box. And so the FIA has, I think, a couple issues on their hand. Number one, around this rule on like who can touch the car, what qualifies as working on it. And then I think the bigger issue is like their video replay center took way too long to figure this out. Yeah. And it just ruins, I think, the fan experience for the rest of us to watch the podium. And then, you know, we turn the show off and then learn later on that that isn't exactly like how the everybody finished up.
Yeah. And then it gets changed back again. So it's a mess. And we've definitely seen guys get their podiums ripped, or guys who they don't overturn the appeal. And so the guy who actually wins the podium because the other guy cheated, or you know, the team didn't do something right, they don't get to have their podium. And so the team was upset too, because they were like, if you would have told us earlier, we would have changed our strategy in those last like 24 laps or whatever it was that they had. And so I was like, well, why are you taking so long, but why not at least let us know the things that you're trying to decide? Maybe that we could be facing a 10-second penalty versus a 5, or even like that there should be a penalty at all or not a penalty at all. So all of it was a mess in that sense. But it was just, you know, it was a small thing that ended up being – they got the right call, which is we've seen not happen before. And so I'm just glad they got the faster car and the better driver for the day end up in third. And, you know, poor Mercedes, poor George, just like his whole career is like – hey, first place, nope, yoink. Hey, third place, yoink. Like it's just crazy how the year is worked out for Mercedes. We'll get into that a little bit as well. This weekend, though, the big story, of course, is that that Max's car had some reliability issues, and Red Bull had to put him because of that, he ended up not getting a good quality lap. He ends up being 15th on the grid. Checo starts at the pole, and he goes front to back, leading that race the entire time. His 5th race win of his career, the 4th under Red Bull. Is he getting better, or is it just is he the Valtteri Bottas of the Red Bull team? It seems like he is just an extremely good racer. I mean, not that Valtteri wasn't, but he had a really good piece of equipment, the best one under him, and that's obviously what Red Bull has as well.
Yeah, and he's just shown his mastery on the street courses, right? I mean, if I remember, it's Monaco, Malaysia, here. I can't remember what the 4th win was, but he's definitely really good at the street courses.
Let me look. I'll have to look, but I think he did maybe won another one in the Middle East as well, but I'll look here.
Yeah. So I know his first win prior to Red Bull was at Bahrain at the end of the season.
Yes, that's right.
I think he's legit, man. I think Max is – legitimately, I'm not going to say scared of, but I think he is considering Checo his closest competitor on the title fight. So, yeah, I mean, it was really interesting coming down to the end of the race when Max started asking about fastest lap. And they were telling the drivers, you know, pace is 33.0, but, Max was, well, what is the fastest lap time? And then in the cool down room, or when, you know, they're all kind of getting ready to go out on the podium, you could hear the two talking, and it seemed like Perez found out that Max had stolen the fastest lap away from him, like, when he was getting interviewed at the end.
Yes.
Or when he was getting interviewed straight out of the car. And then in that cool down room, he asked, like, hey, like, so I guess I, you know, lost the, or that you got the fastest lap. Did they tell you to keep pace? And Max said, yeah, they told me 33.0, but, you know, it was the fastest lap wasn't too far off of that. And he was trying to sweep it under the rug.
Yeah,
and
he pulled like a bugged. Right. And he was pissed when he found out, too. You could see, like, that look in his face, like, ugh, like, because it's the difference of his name not being at the top of the race, or of like the driver standings.
Right,
yeah. He's down a point. He's down that point. And it just adds to, I love that these guys are competitive. Like, you would hate for there to just be this, like, oh no, we're great teammates and that's it. That's the end of it. These guys, I don't get the, like, I think they respect the heck out of each other. Probably. Maybe not, because in the end, you know, when you had Max rolling up and saying, and they asked him about, you know, what this weekend was like starting 15th and finishing second. And he was just like, I didn't come here to finish second. And everyone's like, oh, okay, but like your teammate's pretty good. And he's like, yeah, whatever. Like, and you know, so here, I'm going to throw some more onto this thing. You want some more juicy rumor action? Okay. So Nico Rosberg, after the whole thing, and this is a guy who has been on a team where the two drivers didn't necessarily like each other and they had good equipment and it was a battle all the time. And you could say it's very much like, you know, this guy who's supposed to be this multi world champion and this other guy who's just pesky, you know, because he was that guy who stole that world championship in 2016. Here's what Nico Rosberg said. He goes, talking about Max saying, I didn't come here to finish second. And on top of that, he said, it's not good to see that attitude. We were also told that Max skipped Saturday's team meeting, apparently, for no good reason. I don't think it's a good approach or mentality so early in the season when the team has worked its tail off for you and has done a brilliant job and worked so hard. I think he could be more gracious. Is him being an insane competitor, like, is that an excuse for already looking like you're kind of a bad teammate? He said he was sick on Thursday, too. I think he didn't show up to some of the media stuff. But,
yeah, he was sick.
Well, you tell me, I mean, is this a guy who, and I, you know, that everybody makes everything out of this. Yoss, apparently, his dad passed Checo, and Checo kind of was like, hey, and he ignored him. That was the report.
Yeah, that
right?
Video was spicy.
It was weird.
It was weird. You're like, Papa Verstappen, he does not have a good poker face. You could tell how upset he was about that. But and so I'm sure the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I think Max tries to be a little bit more gracious, but I think deep down inside, he wants to win, and he does not want to lose to Checo. So I think this is going to be actually pretty exciting. And, you know, all the way back to Brazil last year with Max not following the team's orders to let Checo by, and now Max not following what the team told him. It was just like, hey, bring it home. You know, he was complaining of an issue with what sounded like to be a drive shaft issue again, just the weird vibration at high speeds. You know, Max was attacking the curb super hard. And so they're like, you know, keep it off the curbs, run a 33 flat and just come home in second. And then no, he just went all out on my last lap and got the fastest lap. So I'm sure if you're Checo, you're like, okay, all right, that's it. Gloves off. Like, if you're not playing the team game, I'm not either. You know, I'm not here to just lay over for you.
Right. Is there an F1 world? Is there like an F1 Hall of Fame? Is it just like, hey, if you were a world champion, then you're in the Hall of Fame? Like, I don't know, because I was trying to think about where Fernando lines up. I was looking at a picture of him today, 20 years on from his first podium. And to imagine somebody doing this for 20 years. If he has a good car under him, he just either wins or is right in that fight, right? And so he is he's been as impressive as anybody, I think, across the history of the sport. I mean, he's already a two-time world champ, but I think that doing this with the longevity that he has, I mean, he's in his early 40s now and doing what he does. And I could imagine him winning a couple of races this year, you know, if Red Bull isn't on their A game the entire time. And so I don't know where we put him historically. Is he a top five driver all time? Is he top 10? And I'm not like, it's not like I'm not trying to go, he's definitely better than Juan Manuel Fangio. Like, I don't like the old school F1 stuff sometimes I have a hard time with, but where does he land historically? He had his 100th podium this weekend.
Yeah, undoubtedly top 10. And I would make an argument for top five because he's just done it across like so many different eras of Formula One. I mean, it was like the V12 era, the V10 era, the V8, the V6. Like he's raced in all of these different eras where it took a different kind of car to be fast. And he's like pretty much always been competitive, and even in bad equipment. So I think I would put him in the top five. I think he's super impressive. And like you said, I think he's still going to write some history and get some wins this year. I think two wins definitely on the table.
So Fernando has a big weekend, but you know the dominance of Red Bull is both amazing and also kind of concerning, I think, for people in the sport who go, hey, man, if people can't run these dudes down, it doesn't even matter about the amount of wind tunnel time that they're going to get shorted because of their cost cap issues from last year. Everyone's like, yeah, but Aston Martin, they get 50% more wind tunnel time. It's like, who cares? These guys, their car is so far ahead of everybody else in kind of every aspect, like slow, medium, fast corners, doesn't matter. Their straight line speed is really good. It's maybe not the top, but their DRS speed is really good. Like, they are built for every freaking track, it looks like, on top of the fact that they all take care of their tires so well.
Yeah, I think that the head start that they have right now just on pace will keep them well ahead of the pack for at least the first half of the season. And, you know, with that deficit on wind tunnel time that they have, I expect others to catch up and be more competitive towards the end of the season. But at that point, I think the championship will be locked up. And hopefully we still have a scrap between Perez and Verstappen going into the end of the season. But they have everybody covered. And, you know, there was a lot of hope for Ferrari this weekend, you know, with what they've said is a chassis that's more optimized for straight line speed. And they got outrun by Mercedes, you know,
right?
And fatalist, everything's over, like the building is on fire. Mercedes outran both the Ferraris. And so, Ferrari has a long ways to go too.
Okay. Now that we got that out of the way, of like this team that's just dominating everybody. Aston Martin, of course, getting on the podium after the two Red Bulls, but a dominant weekend for them, for Red Bull. The rest of the field is massive. They have a huge personality problem here. No one wants to choose exactly what they are. I don't know what's going on at Ferrari because they have a fast car, but Charles is already complaining about, hey, the team needs to figure this thing out. And Ferrari seems desperate at this point. Mercedes seems like they are definitely like kind of by far the fourth ish best team, like a third or fourth best team on the grid. And Lewis was somewhere else. You know, he's like blank stare, did not understand the car this weekend. He even said that. And that's a massive disappointment for them. And I don't think it's just like him saying, and he's pretty good at going, yeah, the car's just not good, and you know, otherwise I'd be awesome. Except for they just don't know what they have right now. And being outperformed by George is also another thing that he's probably not used to, a teammate kind of nipping him every time.
Yeah, I think he's getting really frustrated about that last point, that George is consistently out-qualifying and out-racing him. And I think there was a quote he said, something about like, yeah, something about this car, George is able to, it plays more into George's hands than mine. But I mean, the wholesale changes are coming at Mercedes, and if Toto's to be believed, in the next few races, it's going to be a very different philosophy on that car. You know, they said this weekend that they had found something in the data, in the simulation data, that kind of was an unlock for them on kind of proving that this design philosophy is wrong. And having been a simulation engineer, I'm like, okay. I just don't believe that there was just some big error. They're like, oh, sorry, we found the big error in the code and everything was wrong. And now, you know, let's turn, make a 180 degree turn. I think that they're probably overselling that. And it's probably easy to just like throw the engineers under the bus and say, oh, like we were getting, you know, bad data from the engineers. And that, and now that they fixed it, we know exactly what to do. That's easier to say than we just had, you know, the wrong philosophy.
All right. So across the weekend, Dan, it's our turn now to throw out the people who sucked and the people who did not suck. So people who impressed you this weekend, I don't care how many you throw out there. Let's do drivers. Let's do constructors. Let's start with the drivers who sucked this weekend for you.
Oh, man. Lando, again, oh, I know, I know that they both like had their issues with, you know, they had to take an extra pit stop at the very beginning to put on the front nose, but like, then they would, once they kind of caught up to the pack after the safety car, they weren't fast. They weren't passing anybody.
No.
Like they, like Oscar barely got around Logan Sargeant right at the very end. So I still think that there's a plenty, of, concern there at McLaren. I think that they're bottom of the barrel right now.
For me, the constructors that I felt bad because I don't really want to like totally dig on them, but you know, I kept thinking that Alpha was going to be a little bit better than what they've been the last two races, and yeah. I think maybe this is a little bit of me who picked Valtteri Bottas as one of my, I think he was my fifth driver in the fantasy stuff. And so maybe this is just me feeling pissed that he hasn't delivered, but I'm like, man, Alfa Romeo, another, just a weekend with no points. And like, it just didn't really look like no one's even talking about him. Like that's the other thing is like, when no one talks about him, and it's easy to jump on McLaren because they've looked like dog water. But I do think that, you know, they probably, yeah, it's crazy. Cause on, you have Williams, who also didn't do that well this weekend, but you still had like Logan Sargeant beat Lando Norris. You know, like that's that's not insignificant, and he was maybe a half a second off of Oscar Piastri. So, I think that these guys at these lower teams, it's one thing to be on Williams that people don't expect much out of you, and it's probably like, you know, McLaren, everybody wants to see a little bit more. But I was a little bit disappointed by Alpha just because I keep thinking that they're going to have a little bit more pace. The constructors that were a little bit more surprising or maybe had a good weekend quietly or loudly, however you think.
I think Mercedes should be happy with the result, especially after Friday and Saturday feeling like they were terrible. I think they raced pretty well. Alpine got double points in eighth and ninth. So I think that's a little bit of a turnaround for them from the last race. I think they came into the season before preseason testing and believing that they were the fourth fastest team. And they didn't look like that after Bahrain, but you know, potentially, I don't know. I don't think that they're going to be the fourth fastest. I think fifth is the best that they can hope for with Aston Martin, because Lance Stroll was pretty quick. You think he was running top five, top seven when he had his issues? Mm-hmm. So I think those? As on a constructor level.
Yeah, I just can't remember what his issue was, because I remember him like being pulled over, but then were they like trying to put a fire out, or I can't remember how it came for him.
No, I think he was I didn't think they said on the broadcast. I think all we heard was the radio call to stop the car.
Right.
And I didn't think they said anything. Albon was brakes, I believe, when the safety car came out.
Sure. Tip of the cap also to the first points of the year for Haas, and K-Mag gets the 1 point, but Nico Hülkenberg is out qualified K-Mag both of the first weekends, and he was in Q3 last week. So the idea is that they probably, and these are two astute drivers, like these are two really, really veteran dudes, and if the car is quick and they are kind of unlocking some things, it seems like over the past couple of weeks, this might be, you might be able to see these guys sneak in and score more points than and get into that kind of seventh spot maybe in the constructors.
Yeah, I think that is definitely in the cards for Haas. They raced well, and K-Mag, him and Yuki were really, really going at it. I thought those two were going to wreck. They were really aggressive, and I love that radio call when Yuki got passed.
Just
I don't know
screaming.
If you heard that.
But yeah,
It was like some inaudible, like, over the radio.
Yeah.
He was so mad. That was good for K-Mag. I think Haas, like you said, they've shown a lot of speed in qualifying, which in Formula 1 was, you know, a huge deal. And if they can just keep, you know, their noses clean and stay out of trouble, they should be hunting in that 12th to 9th area a whole bunch this season and be able to score points.
Okay. drivers who sucked this weekend. Maybe the equipment under him is one thing, but the guys who absolutely blew it this weekend, and you're going, what is your problem?
Oh man, Lando. I mean, his equipment is no bueno, but I think that it can't be as bad as it looked. I just don't know if he's racing with how much like gusto is he actually racing right now. Is he excited to be battling for 16th with Logan Sargeant? I doubt it. I bet he's just running around there thinking about how can I get out of this contract.
Right. And he's also, I mean, what's wild about it is that like you haven't seen a smile on this guy's face at all season.
Mm-mm.
Downtrodden look all the time and trying to figure out what's going on in his life. He's just 1,000-yard stare. And you know, if you're Danny Rick, you go, I got out of a good situation. I know I'd rather be in an F1 seat somewhere. That'd be preferable to being a reserve driver, but man, when McLaren can't figure it out, and you know, from what you've taught me and from what we've kind of watched, it's just like development of cars to make them fast again is not an overnight process. It's not a year-to-year thing even sometimes. This is like, we might have to figure this out, not just for next year, but we have a long road ahead of us. And this is a guy who is probably asking about how he could get out of this contract that he signed for a long, long term, see if he can get out of that thing early. I'm going to go with the people that did not perform this weekend. Valtteri had a bad weekend. I do think that I know that Charles's car is not great, but like to be behind his teammate and to just not figure it out. I don't know. What's the deal at Ferrari? I don't know. And part of it is that I just don't like how much he complains about everything. As soon as the race is over, Ferrari needs to get their crap together. You know, it's just like, okay,
yeah,
we all know
even
that,
during the race. Like, even during the race, he had that little call where they were like, you know, something about in the safety car that he could have like sped between the safety car lines, which is the front stretch, and gained some time or passed Lewis Hamilton while he was pitting. And he was like, come on, you got to tell me that beforehand. And he's got a little bit of a point, but he does. It's almost like he's kind of believed what everybody else has been telling him, which is like, hey, last year was all your team's fault. And like, you were amazing. And I hope that doesn't become his MO, because I like Charles a lot, but he is a bit like Lando right there. He just is kind of depressing to watch right now.
Yeah. Lewis also uninspired driving, it seems like, and just not really. It's like, it's so weird to see them not in this race after 5 or 6 laps, right? Where you just go, oh boy. There, you just see those interval times start dropping, and you go, "Oh my goodness, these guys do not have it." And chasing down Red Bull for the rest of the season, Aston Martin isn't really even there either. And so, it's just as crazy how much in front that Red Bull car is, you know, going into this thing. So, okay, other things that we learned from this weekend, Dan, that maybe we're missing here in this one.
Yeah, the FIA has a lot to figure out on how they divvy out penalties and what their own rule book says. I think that's one thing we learned that they got to figure out. And it sounds like they made an announcement that they're going to revise the rule, particularly about this pit stop thing, before the next race in Australia.
Yeah. Seems easy. Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully they get that figured out. I think that, I think we learned that Sergio is absolutely in this title fight. And is going to, I think, be the most exciting part of this season, him versus Max. And that
will they let
Alonso's?
Him? Will they
yeah,
let
that's him? I have been thinking about that. Are they going to sabotage? Like, I think that I think they'll let him race until the Constructors' Championship is clearly in the bag. And then, how that goes on behind the scenes, I don't know. Hopefully it plays out on Netflix. We get to see a little bit more behind the scenes next year. But I think that they will tell Sergio to back down if we're halfway through the season and he's still pressuring Max. But I don't think they'll say it directly. I think that he'll just have a series of unfortunate strategy calls and pit stop mishaps and stuff that will guarantee Max a few more wins. Okay. But I think we have to get halfway through the season before to really know that. I think it's, if I'm Christian Horner, it's too early to make that decision right now.
Yeah.
Unless they start racing each other super hard and destroying equipment.
Which, you know, we've seen in the past, even at that team. So I don't, and even with one of these guys, I do think that the season could be I really hope that the wind tunnel stuff does improve some of these teams. I just don't like that when as soon as the race starts, you already know who's going to win the thing if their car holds up the whole time. Even when Max was like, oh, something's going on. I feel something. There's a noise. Something feels different. And they're like, relax. You're like, the data's fine. It's just this other thing. And that's why it feels like that. Like, this is an easy win for us still. Like, even like you're having what you think are issues. And even the day before, like, imagine if that would have happened. Like, if that doesn't happen in Q2 to him, which is, I think, when it happened, right? Didn't it happen?
Right,
in,
yeah.
So as soon, if that doesn't happen to him in Q2, maybe it happens on race day, and then you're talking about a real friggin' problem inside. You think Jos Verstappen is being cold there? Everybody immediately goes, oh, you gate, like, Sergio has a better car for that weekend, and then, you know, then it goes back and forth already. And so mm-hmm. I love that stuff, and at the same time, I'm like, it, you know, give us some wet weather tracks so we can have something that gives us, you know, a little bit of hope that it's going to be interesting. But I do wonder if this season's going to improve in terms of competitiveness, or if we're just going to have to cheer, you know, third through seventh place in the constructors.
Yeah, that's the double-sided coin of being an F1 fan. It can be an extremely exciting season or be pretty dry, and we've had both in the last 10, 20 years. The FIA, I think, Formula One is so much more a business now, or it's like it's as much of a business as it's ever been, run by really savvy business folk. And so I don't think there's a lot that they can do to like step on the scale during the season, but I think that they're going to be taking another look on how they divvy out wind tunnel time and whatever other levers they can pull to ensure more competitiveness, because they don't want a 7-year run like Mercedes had with Red Bull. I think that would kill the momentum that was really built in F1. I think two seasons ago when Max won the championship and kind of toppled the dynasty. I don't think they don't want to get into another dynasty run like that. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of mid-season changes come to like the technical regulations, like we had last year during the summer break that was supposedly meant to hurt Red Bull. So yeah, I guess I would keep an eye on any of those technical regs that come out. I haven't heard any whisperings yet, but and I also think that there will be more competitive teams, or I think the teams will bring updates that will make them more competitive, but more likely with each other and not necessarily challenging Red Bull, but Mercedes, Ferrari, Aston, you know, and Alpine. I think we're going to create a pretty exciting, you know, fight for second place.
A couple of weekends here then now till Albert Park and Melbourne. Help me understand a little bit about this track. Who does it favor the most, or is every track just going to favor Red Bull from here on out?
Albert Park was the track that I got to drive the rental car around last year.
So that's right.
It favors me driving the like Toyota, whatever I was in.
Oh, it wasn't one of those supercharged V8s that they race with. It was just like a Toyota Prius that you rented.
Something like that. Yeah. Albert Park's cool. It's, I guess it was technically a street circuit because it's in the middle of a city. And, but it's like a central park, just giant city park that, you know, is, I think, really high quality circuit. I think that it's going to be a lot like the last couple of races. I don't expect to see one team particularly favored because of the layout of the track. But it'll be a day race. It'll be warm because it's kind of summertime going into fall there in Australia. So maybe that's a little bit of a different environment to be racing in than what we've seen in these first two races of the year, which were night races in cooler temperatures.
Dan, we'll get back together in the next week or so, and then we'll really get in and dig into Melbourne and Albert Park and the third race of the F1 season. Thanks for hanging out, man, as always. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, we'll be back again. Dan Jimenez, Alex Keery. It is KSL Sports, KSL Podcasts, Mode Push. We'll see you next time, everybody.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.